The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
Former President Donald Trump easily won the New Hampshire primary earlier this week. He has swept the opening contest for the Republican presidential nomination and delivered a fresh setback to his last major rival, former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley.
Well, I want to thank everybody. This is a fantastic state. This is a great, great state. You know, we won New Hampshire three times now. Three.
Jim Ellis, we got to hear that he won New Hampshire three times. How you doing? Good to have you on again.
Well, very well. Thank you. It's always my pleasure. Yes, he won it three times in the Republican primary, but it's important to know that he lost it twice in the general election, and that's where it really counts.
Right. He didn't seem to be too happy about Nikki Haley delivering her speech in, you know, not admitting she lost, but staying on. Take a listen to this.
I did hear Nikki say, and now it's off to South Carolina. Well, I love South Carolina. I love it. But, you know, she forgot one thing. She forgot one thing. Next week it's Nevada.
Yeah, and that's interesting, isn't it, in the fact that he's entered in the caucus contest, who gets to pick up the delegates. She's entered in the beauty pageant vote, which is the one where voters go to the polls. Kind of an interesting thing there. Trump wins without even trying.
It's rather an astonishing move on her part, and this decision had to be made a while ago. But she was the only candidate that entered this beauty contest primary. So what happened in Nevada was the legislature and the governor forced a primary on the whole state, changed the law. But the Republican Party doesn't want to apportion delegates that way. So they're having a primary that doesn't mean anything. And the caucus still exists there for the Republicans. And that's what's going to apportion the delegates. She's the only candidate that entered the primary that means nothing on the Republican side. It does carry delegates on the Democratic side, but not the Republican side. And then the caucus, she's not part of, because under the Republican rules, you could be in one or the other. And so Trump is going to win all the delegates here in Nevada. And he was right. It was very curious that she said, well, when we're on to South Carolina next. No, you're on to Nevada in February 6th. And so that's a big win for Trump. And I think a big mistake for Haley if she really intends to compete, because remember, it's a delegate battle for the nomination.
She could brag for a couple days because it's like the caucus is like 3 days later or something, right? So she gets to brag, look at me, I did great in the Nevada primary. Well, it's not going to matter. It's not going to matter.
And she's the only one on the ballot. The other people are not in the race, like Mike Pence and several others who are no longer in the race. So Trump is not on the primary ballot. He's on the caucus side, because that's where you get the delegates.
Right,
and
right.
So I'm unclear as to why the Haley campaign made that decision to enter the primary. I think they felt, oh, she probably gets a bump because the media will cover that she won a primary. But in actuality, it's a nothing win. So it's a curious decision and an error on her part.
All right, here is Nikki Haley from earlier the week. Take a listen.
Well, I have news for all of them. Woo! New Hampshire is first in the nation. It is not the last in the nation.
And she goes on to say,
this race is far from over. There are dozens of states left to go.
And that kind of bothered Trump because, you know, he's like the winner. Hey, she hasn't won one yet. She's not poised to do well in South Carolina. Why is she staying in the race? And there's been a lot of pundits who say that there's money flowing to her by anti-Trump folks, and some of them may not be Republicans.
Which is sort of curious, because you would think the Democrats would want to run against Trump, and I think most of them do. So those donors that are supporting Haley, who are Democrats, I'm not sure they're getting the right strategy in terms of winning the general election, because I do think Haley probably is a stronger candidate against Biden because she doesn't have as many negatives, but she's not that strong in the Republican primary, and Trump is going to be the nominee. It's just a question of when, and it's likely if she makes it at all to South Carolina, and if the polls are continue to be what they are, which is Trump leading about 2-1, does she want to get embarrassed in her own state? So she has a decision to make before then.
Yeah.
In any event, I think it's over after South Carolina, because then 3 days after that, they go to Michigan. Trump is in the 60s and polling there. And then we head to Super Tuesday, where we've got 16 entities, 15 states and a territory, voting on March the 5th. And I don't see how she competes with him on that day in terms of a resource standpoint, because, you know, she's usually in single digits in most of these states.
Right. Well, there was other activity this past week. The hopefuls for the open California Senate seat debated a variety of issues. Congresswoman Barbara Lee argued that President Biden is doing all he can when it comes to the border.
The president is trying to get Republicans, mind you, to step up and support over $1 billion to make sure that immigrants are treated fairly.
And it's not about keeping them on the other side of the fence. It's about getting more money so they can be treated fairly. And this was kind of the line throughout the evening. Here's Representative Adam Schiff. He says action needed, but more needs to be done.
It is a crisis. It is unsustainable. But we should approach this with compassion.
Of course. All right. But Republican Steve Garvey chastised the Democrats on their kind of debate over what to do when it comes to the border.
Where have you all been the last 3 years? 4 years ago, 1,000 immigrants were coming across the border. Today, between 10 to 15 to 20,000 illegal immigrants are coming across the border.
Mm. All right, Jim Ellis, your thoughts about Steve Garvey entering this race?
Well, I think Steve Garvey really has a chance to grab that second spot and then advance into the general election. He just simply needs to unite all the Republicans behind his campaign, and that might be enough to do it with the split coming there among all on the Democratic side, with the three members of Congress running, Adam Schiff from Burbank, Katie Porter from Irvine, and Barbara Lee from Oakland. And if that vote gets split, and there's many, many more people on this ballot, there's 20-some people, depending on the split, then, you know, Garvey does have a shot at getting second place. That's the best he can hope for. Schiff looks like he's going to capture first place, so the battle is for second. And he does have a chance to do that, and I thought this debate performance, so I didn't see the whole thing. I did see clips. It looks like he held his own in the debate, and hopefully that will, for him, be able to engender more of a united support among the minority Republican vote throughout the state.
Right. A lot of different issues were debated. One of the topics the candidates clashed over was the potential second Donald Trump presidency. In the debate hosted by Politico and USC in L.A., Democratic Representative Katie Porter pressed Republican former baseball star Steve Garvey over whether he'll support Trump for president.
California, I think what they say is true. Once a Dodger, always a Dodger. He just chewed up 2.5 minutes.
And Garvey said Democrats debated if President Trump becomes president, whether he should be supported.
As my personal choice, I will make it in the sovereignty of wherever that is. And that's my personal choice.
Candidates don't
see,
have personal choices when it comes to being elected
exactly
official.
What's got our country.
So Garvey trying to walk the line that this isn't about who I support for president. This is about California and its problems. And yet the Democrats, that's their playbook, right? To just everything is Trump, Trump, Trump in California, right?
Yeah, Trump and abortion. Those are their two talking points because really they don't have much else to say. I mean, their position on the border is pretty transparent and easy to see through. I mean, all you have to do is watch any type of film of these hundreds of thousands of millions of people coming across the border. And that is becoming a much bigger issue around the country. So finally, it's getting the attention it deserves. The economy, et cetera, you know, depends on where it is at election time. But I think the Democrats are going to be a two-note party throughout the whole country. In every race, it's going to be Trump and abortion. And that's how they'll run. They feel it worked for them before in 2018 and somewhat in 2020 and certainly in 2022. And they're going to continue that. So it's up to the Republicans to create a better vision, something they haven't been able to do in most of the elections, which explained why they underperformed in 2022.
Right, the so-called red wave that didn't materialize.
Right. Well, and Haley, you notice, in Haley's speech, too, last night, she was going on about how we lost, and with Trump at the top of the ticket, we lost in 2018 and 2020 and 2022. The Republicans did not lose in 2022. That is a complete misnomer. Now, did they underperform? Yeah, you could argue that, but they did not lose. They won the House of Representatives. They won key races. There was, and in fact, it was an incumbency, if anything. We had 56 governors and senators run for re-election, and 55 of them won, and the only one that lost was the Nevada Democratic governor. So to say it was a loss for the Republicans in 2022 is just not right. Underperformance, maybe, but a loss, no.
All right, final 30 seconds. Any other, there's a lot, you know, being sucked out of the air of these, you know, weekly events, these races, but is there any side stories that we are missing? What's going on that you're watching?
Well, we'll be looking at, certainly, I think we'll see more focus come on Senate and House races here as we move forward. Once we get through the South Carolina primary, there's going to be more attention, I think, paid to the congressional races around the country, which become key. And remembering that the Senate and the House are extremely close, a couple of votes just either way in both chambers, and we have a major battle on which party is going to have control after this election. And it's way beyond the presidential race in terms of what's going to happen in the House and the Senate races. So I think we'll get some more focus on that in our discussions. We'll be concentrating a lot on that as well.
Yeah. Are we down to two right now on the House as far as Republican lead? Is it just two?
Well, two from the majority. They're at 219 versus the 218 being majority. But the Democrats will go down to 211 when their congressman from New York resigns in February. So it's, yeah, they have a smaller majority, but it's the majority of president voting. And so it is a little bit more than two, but it's still not what it was. We do have special elections to fill some of those seats coming up. Like Gavin Newsom did call a special election for the Kevin McCarthy seat. I was kind of surprised he did that, frankly, because last time there was a Republican vacancy, he just let it sit there all year. But he did call an election, so there will be a replacement for McCarthy in this Congress, as well as the Republican seat in Ohio that's vacant. So it'll build back up here as we in the next few months.
Jim Ellis, ellisinsight.com. We'll check in with you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
Assemblymember Diane Dixon represents the 72nd Assembly District, and she is joining us right now to talk all things politics in the news. Thank you so much for being with us.
Larry, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and there's always a lot of things going on in Sacramento.
There are
so I'm happy to be here.
Crime has been a big story across the state, smash and grabs, people, you know, walking into stores and just taking $900-some worth of stuff, and it's not immune to Orange County, as I have witnessed it in a Newport Beach store. People walking in with a trash bag, just scooping stuff into that bag and walking out. It sounds like what I'm hearing is the legislature is starting to react a little bit, or what's the story?
Well, there's a lot of things happening on crime, and specifically the result of Proposition 47 that was passed in 2014 as a ballot measure by the people who really didn't know what it was going to do. I think it was Safe Streets and Schools Act, which you would ever think that it related to reducing the sentencing requirements on certain crimes. And that's exactly what has happened. And it's taken, that was 2014, 2015 when it was implemented, it's now 2024. It's taken a number of years for the criminal element, really, and whoever else follows lawmaking in Sacramento to realize this is just a bonanza for criminals who want to run in, smash, break a window, and grab valuable items for $950 or less. And so it was just a ticket to ride, if you will, a ticket to steal. And that has evolved as word spread and as in the criminal population that, hey, guys, gals, we could do this and we only get a ticket because it was downgraded from a felony, which meant several years in prison, to a misdemeanor, which means maybe a day or two in county jail. So it was a significant reduction, and it was an incentive to steal. So it's only been in the last year. We've all been watching the news reports on all of this, that it's across the country, but I can only speak to California. Everything starts in California anyway and spreads elsewhere. But we're finally getting traction, and the governor, to his credit, has formed a select committee on retail theft, and other groups, including the Republican caucus, as well as the Problem Solver caucus. I am a member of the Problem Solvers. That's bicameral, bipartisan, both houses, to work together to solve big problems. So a lot happening.
Indeed. One might suggest that since Democrats have a supermajority, this is only getting traction because Democrat constituents must be being affected because they don't seem to care too much about Republicans. Any thought on this becoming a priority as Democrats are now feeling the pressure?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, clearly. And where do we begin? I think a significant change in the last 6 months has been we have a new speaker, Robert Rivas, and he made new committee appointments, and he has changed out the committee chair of public safety. And public safety in the assembly is where all stop crime bills go to die. They just never emerged out of assembly public safety under the former chair. And so now with a new chair, it's Assembly Member McCarty of Sacramento, Democrat, of course. And he, and I've talked with him. I've had some bills. I'll talk about that in a moment. He doesn't say he's a moderate. He has been a progressive voter in the legislature. He's in his last term, so he has a clear progressive record. However, he knows why the prior chair was removed, and so he knows, and to your point, the drum roll for we must stop all this criminal activity. And I ran on a platform, I don't know if you remember this, make crime illegal again, and that's exactly where we are. We are really talking about reinstating and strengthening the weakened laws that Prop 47 created. So I could update you on that. But yes, there is momentum, and we will seize this momentum.
Now, I don't want to get too in the weeds, but I was reading somewhere that some of the proposals are not to actually change 47. That's more difficult, but to come around it with some other legislation. I don't know if it's like watching sausage being made up there, but how do you get where you need to go? Is there a path to get tighter controls on this? And also, not to make the question more complex, is there a commitment on the part of local DAs and prosecutors to actually prosecute these people? Because that's the other part of the equation. When I've had officers tell me we can bring people to them, but they don't prosecute.
Well, you know, it depends on what county you live in. We are fortunate to live in Orange County, where we have a district attorney who will prosecute and will find a way to do it. And in fact, I don't know when the last time you talked with DA Todd Spitzer, but he has been very creative, as have other county prosecutors, district attorneys, to work with the federal government, the U.S. attorneys, because they can prosecute some of these crimes if they're multiple crimes and under RICO, the racketeering federal law. So there are creative ways to go about this. So what I am here in Sacramento to do is help change the law to reinstate the powers of the prosecution and the criminal justice system that have changed. Your earlier comment is absolutely right. Interestingly enough, I did not know this until I've gotten into this. The words of Proposition 47, it's in the Constitution that the measure may be amended by only a two-thirds vote of the members of each house of the legislature and signed by the governor so long as the amendments are consistent with the intent of the act, which in other words means it can never be amended by the legislature. However, the Prop 47, the Constitution, allows the legislature by majority vote to amend, add, or repeal provisions to further reduce the penalties. In other words, to go further in addition to make Proposition 47 further weaken our criminal justice system. It would only take a majority vote. So the consequence of that is there are two options. Well, really only one now, is really to go to back to the people, which actually is a good thing because the people who voted this in should understand truly what was created and to fix. Now, I don't know anybody proposing real seriously to repeal. There have been talk about repealing Prop 47. I think that's a heavier lift, but there are some targeted areas relating to smash and grab retail theft. I did not know this new fact in my own mind. I mean, others may have known this, but I did not know that Proposition 47 essentially eliminated the definition of breaking and entering and burglary when it related to commercial activity. It created a new crime classification called shoplifting, and shoplifting was reduced to a misdemeanor. So a fix would be a possible. It would take a ballot measure to amend the Constitution to reinstate the definition of burglary, where breaking and entering is a felony. And the intent to commit burglary, and using smash and grab activities as an example, is their intent. You break, smash the windows, and that's the intent, and you break it and enter a facility and steal the property. So that's point number one, is bring back burglary, commercial and residential burglary in these instances as a legal definition for felony enhancement. Also, another area that could be proposed and be in a potential initiative or referendum, but an initiative, whatever, let the voters decide. Under Prop 47, prior crimes, thefts of a similar nature related to now shoplifting, are not counted in the aggregate when someone is arrested. So with their prior arrests and possible convictions are discarded. So a fix is to bring all that prior history into the present when they are arrested. And there will be some debate about that, as I understand it, because some forces believe that it would take three priors before you would successfully commit someone or charge someone with a felony. Well, three prior arrests of this type would be $950 times three. It should only be, if you're, my opinion, if there's been one prior and you get arrested again, it's a felony. So my threshold for leniency is a lot lower than perhaps the other parties. Mm. But this, what I'm describing is work in progress.
Right.
There is a bipartisan effort to tighten up 47 to inhibit criminal activity and to realize where the gaps are and where the criminals have identified those gaps and has license to steal, and that's what we have to stop.
Well, this license to steal definitely needs to be dealt with. Such a heavy burden placed on our local businesses that,
yes,
that face people walking along, realizing the changes and smacking out windows and costing businesses thousands of dollars to repair them and all that's going on. And just a carefree attitude. And I hate to be callous about it, but this was not under good intentions. This was under intentions to let people out, to decriminalize stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, Larry. That's the intent of that. That still is a, but right. this is the core of the argument between progressives and non-progressives. Is the progressives want to close down prisons, want to reduce sentencing, want to give people multiple chances, want to rehabilitate. We all support rehabilitation. But what I'm learning is at what point do you start to rehabilitate? You have to arrest and sentence people for serious crimes.
And I'm old cash. I'm old fashioned. When someone's off the streets serving time, they're not smacking windows and breaking in and causing pain to our businesses.
But Larry, understand that I've learned this in the last year. The progressives who, whether they're in public safety, and some of them have been removed under the new realignment, but they're still members of the legislature, so when a bill comes to the floor, they do not want any enhancement. They don't want to sentence anyone to prison.
Right.
They feel that they can be corrected and community programs. Actually, Prop 47 did mandate community rehabilitation programs, but it's never been funded. I did not know that.
Interesting, sir. We'll have to leave it there. We are out of time. If folks want to follow you, where would you suggest they go? I guess they can look you up on the internet, right?
Diane Dixon Assembly. Yes, you could just find my website, all my contact information. Very simple. Diane Dixon, California Assembly, and you'll get to me.
Appreciate it. Out of time. Thank you so much. We'll continue the conversation next time.
Larry, you're terrific. Thanks so much. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino. AM 590, The Answer. You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
When voters go to the polls, they will have a chance to select a candidate for district attorney of L.A. County. My next guest would like to be one of those two, Nathan Hochman. He's an American attorney and candidate for D.A. L.A. County. He has served as a United States Assistant Attorney General. He's with us right now. Thank you so much for being on our program today.
Great to be on. Thank you for inviting me.
There is, I think, a lot of feeling that someone else other than George Gascon ought to be the DA based on some of the things that he has done or not done in the past few years. But you would like to be the one who gets the voters' trust to take that job. Tell us a little bit about the current situation and why you're entering.
Certainly. So I'm a lifelong Angeleno. I was born here, grew up here. Educated here, raised my three children in Los Angeles, and married my wife now of 30 years here. And I look at what George Gascon has done to our safety in the last 3 years, taking it in the exact wrong direction, enacting the most pro-criminal blanket policies in LADA history. And I'm one of these people who are not going to move out of LA County like some people, not going to complain from the sidelines, but I'm going to do something. I'm going to fight for the community that I love. And I have a fairly unique skill set. I went to Stanford Law School. I clerked for a federal judge here in Los Angeles. Went immediately into the U.S. Attorney's Office and was a federal prosecutor for 7 years, going after narcotics traffickers, gang members, environmental criminals, corrupt public officials. Had the chance thereafter to be nominated by President George W. Bush, unanimously confirmed by the U.S. Senate to be the U.S. Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Tax Division, the Department of Justice. Ran a division with a $100 million budget and 350 lawyers doing cases all over the nation. Came back to Los Angeles, was the head of two major international law firms, government investigations practices, and along the way was the president of the LA City Ethics Commission and the co-founder of the LA Sheriff's Foundation. And the reason I share that background is that I think a DA should be experienced to do the job on day one, and I have that experience to do the job.
You talk about Gascon and his going in the wrong direction. Some would argue by design that he was put in office and funded by the George Soros wing of the Democrats, way out to the left. And they do not like people being put in prison, incarcerated. They think it's the wrong thing. Would you follow on that and explain in your thoughts how he got, why he does what he does?
Absolutely. So George, we have to take ourselves back to the summer of 2020 to understand how the voters ended up with George Gascon. Back then, it was the George Floyd incident happened. We had defunding the police movement, riots in the streets. And George Gascon comes in and makes three promises. And he says this out loud. He says, I promise to release violent and serious offenders before they've served their entire sentences. I promise to not prosecute violent and serious criminals before on the front end to the full extent of the law. But he made a third and most important promise, that if I do the first two, things are going to get more safe rather than less safe in our community. And he has lied and failed on that third promise to actually make that come true. There's all the indications from violent crime, property crime between 2019 before he came in 2023, were up by double digits. And people sense that. Over 60% of the people polled say they feel less safe today than when George Gascon got into office several years ago.
Yeah. One of the areas of particular concern that people, Angelenos, see and if you're a businessman, you're facing, and that is having your windows smashed and people grabbing things and taking off and little or nothing done to prosecute them. The images are shocking. There are, you know, department stores in Northern California that have entirely pulled out up in Oakland. You've got a very popular fast food chain saying, that's it, we're done. We're profitable, but we don't want to face all this crime. Here in Los Angeles County, it's not good. I mean, the smash and grabs are very often. You drive through any community, look at the buildings around there. Look at the boarded up windows as the businesses try to keep up. Talk a bit about smash and grabs, and does Gascon have that on his hands, or is that a proposition that we're stuck with?
Well, what I think George Gascon has done is he's told criminals that there are certain crimes and certain criminals that I will no longer hold accountable. And again, he put this in publicly filed special directives on his first day, special directives that I would reverse on my first day of a Hochman administration. Because he basically said to a robber, if you use a gun, I'm not going to charge the gun enhancement. So you can use the gun, don't use the gun, and it'll be effectively the same crime, and incentivizes the robbers to use the gun. He told juveniles, I won't prosecute virtually any of you in adult court. So if you give the gun, you're a gang member, and you give the gun to a 16 or a 17-year-old to use the gun, and they kill someone, they'll be out by the age of 25 in the juvenile system. But they, if they were an adult at 18 or older, they would spend decades in prison. So again, I would reverse all these policies because what they have created is a spiral of lawlessness. And you touch on it with the smash and grab robbers, but it starts with the people going into a CVS, stealing just under $950, and pretty much knowing they're not going to be prosecuted. That leads to basically 100 people doing a flash mob in a 7-Eleven, and then these smash and grab robbers all over our county, as well as people finding a huge increase in property crimes, so you know, home burglaries, car burglaries, creating a community that we don't really recognize anymore, where people truly, for the first time in their lives, are thinking of moving out because it wasn't taxes, it wasn't traffic or smog or even earthquakes that are convincing people to leave. It's the feeling that you can't go out your front door, you can't go into a park, a supermarket, a store, a subway without the feeling that something criminal is going to happen either to you, your relatives, or your kids. So I would reverse that on day one and start holding criminals accountable for their actions.
Yeah. Take a moment and talk about statistics, because you get some people who run for office and they say, well, the numbers are actually down on crime. Well, they reclassify stuff as being a non-felony, and then therefore the numbers are down. I mean, it's what do we need to understand when someone like a Gascon has the nerve to run for office and re-election? He's thinking he's doing a great job.
He absolutely is. In fact, he's a master manipulator of statistics, because he has ushered in the golden age of criminals. So what he says is that the statistics for violent crimes are down in 2023 compared to 2022. What he doesn't do is he doesn't tell you that in 2022, we hit a 15-year record for crime in this county. So what he's basically saying is it's less horrible in 2023, because if we compare 2023 to 2019, before he got into office, all the statistics for crime are way up. So again, he can manipulate the statistics to try and convince voters that he's doing a good job. He can't even, by the way, manipulate the property crime statistics, because they even show that property crime is double digit up in the last year. But again, what criminals are paying attention to is not the statistics. It's that the fact that he has moved the lines in their directions so that they can commit certain crimes now, knowing that even if they get arrested, they'll be arrested in the morning and out by the afternoon.
Mm. All right. There is a feeling, I think, out there to replace him, but you've got kind of a crowded field right now. And how do you differentiate yourself when some might think anyone is better than Gascon, and therefore you just pick one? You know how it is when you get a ballot and you don't really follow along. You see these names. How do we figure out who's best to choose for those top two?
So I think what people should look for is criminal justice experience, proven leadership experience, independence, and the ability to actually beat Gascon. And I have all four. On criminal justice experience, I have 34 years of criminal justice experience as a prosecutor, a U.S. Assistant Attorney General, and a defense attorney been on all sides of the aisle. I've prosecuted virtually every type of case out there myself. And on the leadership side, I've actually the only person who has led a U.S. Department of Justice litigating division. On the private side, major international law firms, government investigations practice, and the L.A. City Ethics Commission. So I uniquely have that leadership experience that no one else can bring. Independence. I believe that actually you need to be independent of politics to be a successful DA. And George Gascon has showed us that if you bring a political ideology into the decision-making as to who should go to jail and who shouldn't, you get the lack of safety in this sort of dystopian environment we're living today. I'm the only person who's running actually as an independent. And because I think I've got to put my money where my mouth is and show voters that in my own registration, I believe so strongly that a DA should be independent that I'm actually a registered independent in this regard. And then finally, you need the resources, the financial resources to beat George Gascon because he's going to tap into the George Soros money. I have raised a record of $1.5 million, which is about, you know, probably 75% more than has ever been raised. And this comes from individuals across the political spectrum and the entire geography of L.A. County, more than doubles everyone else in the race, including George Gascon, and will give me the financial resources to go toe-to-toe with George Soros when he comes into this race so that George Gascon can get beat at the ballot box.
Yeah. Some of these others, though, work in his office or have worked up close, and there's kind of an attractiveness to somebody who's been there being able to turn it around. Do you discount that, or are they good people too?
They're actually very good people. They're a lot of them are successful trial attorneys, and they can, you know, they are good inside of a courtroom. But that is a far stretch from being able to lead the largest local office in the United States, 2,100 employees, 1,000 lawyers, and a $460 million budget. It's a different skill set to be able to lead an office like that as opposed to being a very good trial lawyer, which many of them are. I alone have the additional skill set. I'm not only a successful trial lawyer, but I have the additional skill set of having run very large offices successfully, both in the public and private practice. So while, again, I hope to undo the damage that George Gascon has done to the office, where over 97.8% of the 800 prosecutors that voted to support his recall, I will undo that damage with prosecutors because I believe my job is to elevate them and make them realize all their potential to help us bring safety back to this county rather than do what George Gascon has done and retaliate against them.
Out of time, give us the website where people can read more about you.
Certainly. Thank you. It's NathanHochman.com. That's NathanHochman.com. And please go to my website. Our commercial just started airing this week. We were the first candidate that actually has the resources to put up a commercial. And it basically takes it right to George Gascon, accuses him of bringing failed San Francisco politics to L.A., and shows that I can actually beat him and change the course of our safety back in a direction where people can feel safe again about going outside their front door.
Nathan Hochman, thank you so much running for L.A. County D.A.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
John Lott Jr. is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. John Lott is joining us right now. A story in the news. California says its new gun law is about public safety. But what about these women? A story in the LA Times that actually highlights women who wanted to be able to carry a handgun to protect themselves, but who are caught up in the fact that a new law in California that the state has begun enforcing bans guns in sensitive public places, which John Lott is just about everywhere. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, John, California goes at it any way they can. I mean, the federal government, the high courts say people can have guns. They come back in with another piece of legislation that says, okay, you can have guns, but you can't have them most places. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, California for years has made it extremely difficult for women in particular to be able to go and get guns for protection. When we had the May issue rules, I was able to go and get a list of the concealed carry permit holders in Los Angeles County. And there were like 341 permit holders with an adult population of about 8 million people. Nationwide, about 30% of concealed carry permit holders are women. In Los Angeles County, it was 7%. You know, the difference is in Los Angeles County, somebody applying for a permit has to go to a local public official like the sheriff or police chief and go and try to convince them that they have a good reason. But, you know, Democrats claim that they care about women, that they care about minorities. But apparently, the Democrats always seem to think that wealthy, politically connected men were the ones that ever were able to give them good reasons for why they needed a permanent concealed handgun for protection.
The story, most recently, back and forth with federal courts, the state was forced for a while to stop enforcing a law, then something else changed. It's known as Senate Bill 2. It was drafted as a workaround to the U.S. Supreme Court decision from 2022 that threw out a chunk of the state's and the nation's gun control regulations as unconstitutional, theoretically making it easier for people to obtain concealed carry permits. It, of course, was meant really as a blow to the Supreme Court to keep California from turning into other red states where more folks carry guns. But it's having this backlash, and even the LA Times is having to report on it, that people who would have guns to protect themselves are being blocked from being able to do that.
It's more than that. It's more than that. California, Los Angeles County, for example, and San Francisco, just have kind of stopped issuing permits. You know, so it's not only that where you can carry, but they've had this huge backlog. They just refused to process them. And then the Attorney General in December, right before this law was going to effect, yanked the permits for, you know, something like about 90%, 95% of the concealed carry firearms trainers in the state. So even if they were to start processing permits again, and even if they weren't banning it every place, they've made it so it's impossible to get the necessary 16 hours of training because they've decided that all these individuals that have been training individuals for decades are no longer permitted to go and do the training anymore. And there's, like, no explanation. You know, and the thing is, you know, they talk about these sensitive places and other things that they've listed. There's no evidence that there's ever been any problem in the decades that people have been allowed to carry in those places. This is a new change. You know, the rest of the country doesn't ban people being able to go and carry in all these places that California is banning people to be able to carry. You look at the experience in the rest of the country, permit holders are very rarely convicted of firearms-related violations. They're convicted at about 1/12 the rate that police officers are convicted of firearms-related violations. And police officers are rarely convicted of firearms-related violations. They're convicted at about 1/20th. So that's about 5% of the rate of the general population, and permit holders are just a tiny fraction of theirs. So, you know, it's like a complete evidence-free knee-jerk reaction on the part of the state. You know, they can't point to any evidence that there's ever been any problems with permit holders in California for these areas. They can't point to evidence that there's problems in other places. And, you know, they can't point to there's any problems with all these trainers that they've taken away the licenses for. You know, it's just, they've just done everything possible to make it so that vulnerable people can't protect themselves, and it's just not women. They do things to make it very costly for people to go and get permits. In any case, with the training and the fees, in some parts of the state, it can be well over $1,000 for you to go through the process. And who do they think they're stopping? If my research convinces me of anything, it's basically poor blacks who live in high crime urban areas who are the ones who benefit the most from having a gun for protection. Who do you think you're stopping with these high costs, incredibly high costs, for doing it?
You're making it possible. I mean, that's just the cost of getting the permit.
Right, right. They're going after the wrong people. I mean, basically, another story. California's attorney general has kicked off a series of roundtable discussions to address gun violence across the state. This is State Attorney General Rob Bonta, who says preventing gun violence begins at the community level. Here's what he recently said.
We gathered as partners committed to progress, partners in progress, committed to a future without an epidemic of gun violence.
He was joined by local leaders in Sacramento recently to identify, quote, best practices, unquote, and work toward community-driven solutions to eliminate gun violence. The meetings aim to bring together nonprofits, churches, and local groups to help build safer communities. He says that every region, city, community faces its own unique challenges when addressing gun violence.
And it's critical that we go and hear what is needed directly from community members, organizations on the ground, those in the trenches, and other experts in this space.
He claims that the U.S. leads the world in gun violence.
That's what we will be handing to our children if we don't do better.
Wow. Sounds like a bunch of nothing here. I can't pull out exactly what his strategy is from that story. How about you, John?
Look, I mean, it's simply false to say that the U.S. leads the world in terms of gun violence. The United States is below the average, below the median in terms of homicide rates. We're well below those numbers. But, you know, it's California has a very high rate of mass public shootings. This type of thing is often used to go and justify the different types of gun control laws that you have. Even when you adjust for California's large population on a per capita rate, when you look at the period from 2000 on or 2010 on or 2020 to today, California often has like twice the per capita rate of mass public shootings as the average for the rest of the country. You're way above states like Texas and Florida, which often your governor and your attorney general attack. My own belief, it's your strict gun control laws. I mean, gun control advocates say that California has the strictest gun control laws in the country. Biden says the rest of the country needs to adopt California's strict gun control laws. Don't you think somebody should ask why California has such an incredibly high rate of mass public shootings per capita? You know, so last year, at the beginning of the year, you had those two mass public shootings in Los Angeles County. You had the big shooting in San Mateo. In San Mateo, there's one concealed carry permit holder for every 24,000 adults. In Los Angeles County, there's one permit holder for every 5,600 adults at the time. You know, these mass murders had like nobody to worry about in terms of stopping them. You look at the rest of the country, which has a much lower rate of mass public shootings, and there's over 10% of the adult population has a concealed carry permit. That's 1 in 10 versus 1 in 5,600 or 1 in 24,000. You know, the risks that somebody's going to be there to stop these guys is virtually zero. And now the new law that they have is trying to create the entire state being a gun-free zone. But there's one other comment, and that is he focuses on gun violence. Over 92% of violent crime has absolutely nothing to do with guns. You know, people get harmed and hurt in many different ways. And he should be worried about trying to reduce violence overall, you know, not just the 8%, but the other 92% of violent crime, too. And unfortunately, with people like your district attorney in Los Angeles County or others across the state, your attorney general is AWOL in terms of criticizing them and trying to take over and trying to do the job where they're refusing to go and do the job. He's not spending resources on that. And so, you know, there's so many things that California could fix in terms of the number of police, in terms of prosecuting criminals, in terms of, I mean, at least the judges in California aren't releasing the massive numbers of inmates that they were a few years ago, you know, 2020 through the beginning of 2022, and that's helped some. But you have things like bail reform and other things in the state there which aren't helping. And, you know,
I'm going to leave it with one last story. Positive. Got a minute for it. Gun shows returning to the Orange County Fairgrounds after a judge overturned a ban that lasted for the 2 years. So gun shows are back. They had been blocked. 30 seconds. Your comment.
I mean, gun shows are a way that relatively lower income individuals are able to go and obtain guns for protection. And, you know, there are different parts of California which have tried to ban people being able to go and have gun shows. Gun shows, because of all the different regulations we have in California, have dramatically dropped in any case, even in the places where they haven't been outright banned.
John Lott, Jr., president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino. AM 590, The Answer.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.